Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everybody, welcome back and happy new year to a new episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And it is the new year. It's 2015.
Happy new year!
Those are fireworks. Yeah. Sparkling across the sky.
Those are good sound effects. I'm not going to lie. They're really good.
Yeah.
Oh man, I missed it.
I know, I did too. It's been a while. I had a good Christmas, for those that celebrate Christmas. I didn't get anything magic related, but that's okay.
I didn't get anything magic related either.
I got socks, and I was very happy to receive those.
It's funny, you know, when you're getting old, when you're actually kind of like stoked to get socks.
Yeah. Because your old socks are old, slash, like, you've missed half the pairs now.
But when you're a kid, you're like, socks.
Socks, yeah.
I wanted something cool. And when you're an adult, you're like, sweet, I totally need socks.
Oh, these are the compression kind that make your foot feel like they're being hugged all the time.
What happened to us?
So we're going to start off with just a little, well, today we're talking about Fate Reforged spoilers, and there are quite a lot of them.
It looks so cool.
Yeah.
I'm super excited.
Yeah, me too. I think it opens up a lot of EDH stuff, which is awesome. But before we do that, we're going to talk about some New Year's resolutions.
Some magic-related New Year's resolutions. Yeah, this is something that Jimmy and I wanted to do, was just set a resolution for the year for specifically our magic playing.
I find that usually I try and set a resolution after I like lose a match or play in some kind of competitive format, because I think about, I'm like, you know what? I could have done this better, and I should do this next time or whatever. But I never keep myself to it. So my Magic the Gathering New Year's resolution is to take my time when I play.
And slow it down a little?
Yeah, slow it down. Like, don't feel like you're being rushed, which I think actually happens a lot in Commander, because it takes so long for the turn to get around to you that by the time it gets to you, you've forgotten either what you're going to do or something changed so drastically that your plan is completely different, or you're about to do like a 10-minute combo. So, you know, don't feel rushed, but don't slow play either.
I think that's a really good one too, especially for, like, you know, you and I have been doing more competitive stuff, and in that realm, it's very important to make sure that you play at a deliberate pace.
Yeah,
because it's really easy to just get excited, you know, draw your card before you do something you're supposed to, or play something before you really looked at the card you drew and change your plans because of it. Like, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah, something I heard that a lot of pros do, I guess, is they'll plan out their whole turn before they even play their first card, so they don't go through each phase. They sort of envision what's going to happen. They know what they're going to try and do the whole time. Mm-hmm. That can change in, obviously, multiplayer more, because a lot of stuff can happen. But I feel like that's really effective. Instead of being like, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have gone to combat. It's like, well, if you think about it beforehand and take a little extra time in the prepping phase, you'll save yourself a lot of heartache later.
Yeah, something as we've played more competitively too, I've made sure to do, which is just announce my change of phases, because it, to me, that makes me slow down. So I'm like, okay, upkeep. And then it makes my brain go, is there anything I need to do during upkeep? Okay, you know, main phase.
Yeah.
Okay, go to combat. Like, I just announce those things. Even if I'm not doing anything, it just triggers, you know, my mind, like, constantly aware of where I'm at, and it gives me chances to remember things I might forget otherwise, like triggers and things. So
that's a good point. There are two main phases. I oftentimes forget that.
Second main, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. End step. You know, saying end step on your opponent's end step, too, just gives you the chance to remember triggers. Yeah.
So. It's also important, because if you go to combat and you just turn all your guys sideways, and someone's like, hold on.
Yeah.
Or, like, you're turning one specific person sideways, someone can be like, hold on, I need to tap one person down. Now I know who to tap down, because you've already indicated who you're attacking with.
It's very good to just announce, okay, go to combat, and then look at them. It also makes them think like, oh crap, he's doing something tricky. And then they'd sort of rethink maybe and make mistakes. Yeah. Like, it's a good policy.
Mind games.
I like that. My resolution, I think, is I want to make it to a couple pre-TQs.
Uh-huh.
I haven't made it to any yet, and I had a lot of fun when we went to that when we went to the PTQ.
Yeah.
And so I want to do that. And I mean, it'd be nice to make it to a regional, but that's not a goal. It's just to play a little bit more competitive Magic. Yeah. We did it a little.
Specifically limited, or are you going to delve into Standard again?
I will delve into Standard probably, but I mean, I enjoy Limited better. And it's easier from how I play Magic. Like, I don't have time to play test the Standard decks as much as I would need to to do it. So between EDH and I just enjoy Limited competitively more. So it's probably going to I'll probably skew towards limited, but I'll play some standard.
Okay. Well, you know, let me know when you're gone.
I would say I wish they had commander pre-TQs and stuff, but I don't, because it's just the format's not made for that. I love commander. Yeah. I love, you know, sitting around on a Tuesday night with friends and playing it, but it's not good for a tournament setting.
No, that would be a judge would be called very often for that game more than anything else, I think.
All right, so jumping into we have a contest that we've been running.
We have a contest.
We had a really good
turnout, yeah.
Yeah, really good turnout. We had something like 63 reviews on iTunes. So thank you everybody who filled out reviews on iTunes and said nice things. We're going to announce the winners at the end of this episode. But I do want to say this contest is going to be ongoing into next week.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who's already filled out a review that doesn't win one of the prizes, we are actually giving away larger prizes this time around. So one's a dual deck and one is a virtual fat pack, which means it's 9 packs. It's 9 boosters. It's not actually going to be in the fat pack box, but
maybe we could put it in an old fat pack box.
Oh, wow. Well, look at that. You're getting a free box too.
Yoo-hoo.
But anybody who doesn't win this episode, if you have written the review out, you'll be eligible next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then anybody who didn't have time or hadn't heard about the contest, if you just fill out an iTunes review for the podcast on iTunes, then you'll be eligible to win next week.
Yep.
So
yeah, just leave us a positive review and you will be entered in. So we're going to announce the winners at the end of this episode. And next week we have some really good stuff to give away too. We're going to give away some Commander 2014 products.
Whoa.
Ooh.
And the reviews actually really help this show. They help.
Yeah, they boost when people search for the stuff, so it lets more people find the show and all that stuff, and it helps our metadata and all that.
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
It's very helpful to the show. It also, you know, helps us when we're getting stuff from Wizards to give back to you guys, which is all this stuff is from Wizards. So thank you to them, and so it totally helps us out.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's talk about Fate Reforged. And by talking about Fate Reforged, I mean let's actually say goodbye to Khans of Tarkir.
I'm a little sad.
I am too, but the draft format, you still get to do it twice. You got to do two Khans.
It's true, it's not pure goodbye to Khans, but Khans was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, Khans inspired me to make a new general deck. I built an Anafenza deck just because I have never built in those colors, and I had a lot of black-green lands that were just sitting around not doing anything. So
that's pretty great.
It helped me out, yeah, quite a bit.
I haven't played against that deck yet.
No, it's still being play tested, and I think it needs some adjustments.
Maybe we'll talk about it on a future episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we'll deck tech it. So is Anafenza your favorite card from Khans? I mean,
I don't know, actually. Thinking about it, there are a lot of cards that I really liked. For one, Hardened Scales was like an all-star for Animar because it just sits there and just does work from turn one, and people don't think about getting rid of it, and then they realize how crazy it makes your board state.
It's pretty, that's amazing on that, because it's ramp and everything. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. Hardened Scales might be one of the better EDH cards to come out of that set.
Yeah, and definitely one of the worst limited cards, which is great, you know?
Yeah, although you and I tried to break it online once.
Yeah, we tried, and it was a sad day of redemption.
What was the other card that we paired it with that we were going off with? Retribution of the Ancients.
Retribution of the Ancients, yeah. And then we also have what's the guy that you can tap and delve cards to give a creature at -X/-X?
Oh, yeah.
I think we had him, too.
Yeah,
Necropolis
Fiend.
Out.
Yeah, yeah.
We
and then through some buggy MTGO, we just destroyed our own creatures. That was awesome. Anyway.
Thinking about it, I think my favorite card from Khans was actually the Fetchlands.
Yeah.
Finally had access to these lands that you can only put one in your deck, sure, but like it's cool. Like it's kind of the thing where you see it in like the deck text or the deck list that are like, this deck costs so many dollars. And like, where's all this coming from? And you look at the fetch lands, you're like, oh.
But, yeah, now, the tri lands, actually, I would say for me, like I put.
Right, the tri lands.
Like nearly every one of my decks got at least one tri land. You know, the five color decks got 5 new lands, which is a huge boon and I have like 3 5 color decks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that just the lands and Khans were like my favorite thing, which a lot of them are back, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Clever Impersonator is also a standout because it can become anything, and that feels like it's pretty good in EDH. Also a big fan of Rattleclaw Mystic, but that's also for Animar as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's interesting. The morph dynamic plays into EDH because you're allowed to morph a lot more, I think.
You have time to do it, yeah.
And Rattleclaw is definitely one that you want to do because you can flip it up the next turn and get a ton of mana from it, which is nice.
All right, well, let's move on to the new set.
Fate Reforged.
It's been fully spoiled now, so we can look at the entire thing.
We'll have the link in the description below for you guys to check that out.
So there's 3 new mechanics. The new, I guess, is the new Obzon mechanic. Mm-hmm. is bolster.
And then a number. So bolster X.
Yeah, so bolster, what bolster means is whatever that number is, you put that many 1-1 counters on your creature with the lowest
toughness.
Yeah. So yeah, it's toughness specifically, which is interesting.
Yeah. Bolster makes sense flavor-wise because you're getting, you know, you're toughening up sort of the defenses. Right.
So if it's bolster 3, you'd look at basically your creature with the lowest toughness or tied for the lowest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's tied, you get to pick.
Yep.
And then you put 3 1-1 counters on it if it's bolster 3. If it's bolster 2, you put 2 1-1 counters on it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cards that some creatures do this when they come in. Some instants do it. Some sorceries do it.
Some enchantments do it every turn.
Mm-hmm. Bolster every turn. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So this is it's an interesting mechanic. I think there are uses in some decks. Mark Chesa, if there's, I don't know what, like, it would have to be in black.
Yeah, white, black, or red. But there is a lot of white and black for Abzan in that. So
if there's a black bolster card specifically.
Yeah. The only problem is that I feel like it's going to be tough to really find where this matches well, because it's either you're wasting a card to bolster, or it's an enter the battlefield effect, or, you know, it'll be interesting. I think White Chesa can benefit from a couple of these cards.
It's not a huge effect in EDH in general, because just like in a 1-on-1 game, like, all of a sudden, you have a creature that is +3/+3 more than it was. That's huge.
That's huge.
In EDH, it's like, so what?
Yeah, I'm just going to murder you with Arc Bond.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is a new card we'll talk about, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about that one.
Mardu's new mechanic is called Dash, which is very much an aggro, come at your face.
Could be an Animarn mechanic.
Yeah, exactly. So you can cast, each of the spells will have a dash cost, which is a alternate cost. Sometimes it's the same. Sometimes it's just different sorting of the mana. And you can cast the spell for the dash cost. It gains haste, and it's returned to the battlefield to its owner's hands at the next end step. And you can only do this during your main phase. So
it's only on creatures, right?
Yeah, it's mostly, I mean, who knows? It could be on something else, but I think it's got to be on creatures only. I mean, an enchantment could have dash, but that would be
weird.
Enchantment with haste. So basically, the creature will come out. You can swing with it. A lot of the creatures in the set sort of have an additional thing that happens when you dash them. And we'll talk more about that when we get to some of those cards. But yeah, Dash, it seems interesting. It's cool because you get to bounce the card back to your hand if it's unblocked, and you can re-up on sort of enter the battlefield
Or even
effects.
If it's blocked and it doesn't die. It's at your end step, it just comes back to your hand, so it doesn't stay on the board, which is usually a downside, but Dash can be an upside because, well, Animar, for one, cares about every time you cast a creature. Something like Purphoros cares about any time a creature enters the battlefield.
Yeah. I wonder if Animar actually affects the dash cost. That'd be interesting if he lowers that as well.
I think he doesn't, because it's an alternate cost. Yeah, he only affects the CMC, as it were.
Right, right.
So the number in the top right. And you're right. A lot of the cards have an effect, additional effect, or a separate effect when they're dashed.
And some of them are pretty good too.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a cool one, and I can see some uses in EDH. It'll be fringe stuff. It's going to be specific to certain commanders. It's not like it's just good in all EDH decks. But and the last one is Manifest. One is really crazy.
This is crazy, especially because I can feel it. It's only going to get crazier as it goes on. This is, of all three of the abilities, I think this is the one that's asking to get broken the most.
Yeah. What Manifest says, it says Manifest is, boy, this is hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because it's not always the top card of your library, right?
Yeah, I said usually from the top of your library, because that's what we've seen so far. But it could come from, like, sometimes it asks you to create two piles and shuffle them and then create a manifested card from that.
Manifesting is basically turning a card into a face-down 2/2 creature.
Kind of like a morph.
Kind of like a morph, but it could be a land. It could be a spell. An instant, a sorcery, an enchantment, or an artifact that's not a creature. It can be a non-creature. Yep. If it's not a creature, you can't ever flip it up. If it is a creature, then you can flip it up for its casting cost.
Right.
So usually it'll say something like manifest the top card of your library, and then you just basically take the top card of your library and you put it face down as a 2/2 creature.
And now you can look at it to find out what it is exactly.
Yeah, and if it is a creature, you can flip it up for its casting cost. And if it's not, it's just a 2/2 creature that you got onto the battlefield, quote-unquote, for free.
Yeah, and now this is crazy because, one, there are cards that say, like, manifest the top two cards or whatever, and if there's a way to stack your deck to put a specific card on top, then that benefits you a ton. Also, it's like, there's a lot more deceit in this than there was with Morph. Because with Morph, you knew that, okay.
Oh, it has to be one of these four creatures.
One of these, in the right colors or whatever. With Manifest, you can actually flip up Morph cards for cheaper than their Morph cost and get the effects. Like, Master of Pearls is one that Marshall talked about in LA.
Yeah. I mean, in EDH, it's insanity because I attack you with a manifested card. It could be a Blightsteel Colossus. Like, if you don't block it, you could die.
Yeah.
and you have no idea. Like, it could be any creature in the history of Magic coming at you. Like, I think there's potential for it to be, like, pretty insane in EDH. Totally fun.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, we have things like Scroll Rack, Sensei's Divining Top, just Jace the Mind Sculptor, you know, Brainstorm. Yeah. Like, all kinds of stuff to just stack the top of our deck how we want to. So,
yeah,
it's pretty... If somebody brainstorms and then plays a manifest card
then
attacks you with one of those manifest cards, block it or kill, just kill it.
Exactly.
Like, do something, because, yeah, that's not... It's not good news for you.
Yeah. Well, then they flip it over and it's just the land coming
in.
They're like, ha ha. I didn't want that. We didn't want that land at the top of my library anyway. Woo. Yeah. It's interesting because it being colorless also gives a lot of other cards, you know, like it makes Ghostfire Blade super relevant now, too. It's really interesting. So I'm curious and I'm very intrigued to see where this is going to go, because I feel like it doesn't lead itself to be broken necessarily, because you still have to pay the converted mana cost for the cards when you flip them over. Or if it's a morph card, you can still pay the morph cost as well, because it is upside down.
If that's cheaper.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to choose, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see if this, A, enters standard in a significant way, and B, how people really get around to using it for fun times in EDH.
I just see some crazy shenanigans that are not like necessarily like infinite combo broken stuff. It's just like...
You have no idea what's coming.
What the heck? That could be anything.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a card that like takes all the creature cards from someone's graveyard and then manifests all of them.
That's insanity.
And you can sort them however you want.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's cool. Whatever happens, it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
We also get a new cycle of legendary creatures. They're the new cons of each, not the set, but the cons being like the leader of each clan.
Yeah, so there's one for each clan from Abzan all the way to Temur.
So these are our new generals.
Potential generals.
Yeah, they don't have to be. Well, let's start with Dafatar. How do you say that?
Dagatar. He's got a cool
hat. Oh, you know, you've
got
to say it with an accent.
Dagatar.
The adamant.
So one thing to note is that these cards, while they look monocolored on the surface, they actually have inside their text box hybrid symbols. Yeah, and those...
Oh, we should go over that rule. It's what's called the Memnarch rule.
Yeah.
So Memnarch is an artifact creature, but within his rules text, he has two abilities that are activated and they require blue mana. So Memnarch's technically a blue general.
Yep.
So if you have a rule, not rules text, but just text, it gets confusing because the mechanic extort.
Yes.
The mechanic extort has a red, white, or
black-white
hybrid mana symbol in its rules text, but a character or a card with extort is not a black-white card.
Correct.
Because it's within the rules text. If it's in the abilities text, then it gets those colors as part of its the colors you can use for the deck. Yeah. So
an easy way to tell those apart is rules texts are in italics and inside parentheses. They're basically, they print them on all the like the core sets. They'll always have like, haste, this means this creature can enter the battlefield and do this immediately, etc.
I think extort's the only one that throws a wrench.
I think it is.
So basically, if it's not extort, then any mana symbols in the text box are part of the color that you can use, the color pie that is available to you.
So Dagatar the Adamant is a Abzan card, because he's black, green, and white.
But his casting cost is 3 and a white.
Yep.
Okay.
Which makes it really interesting. Just another aside is that these generals are going to be a lot easier to cast than the multicolor ones from the last set, because you only need to have one color.
You might build your decks kind of like Dagatar is going to have to be more white base, because you want to make sure that you get white for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you might build your deck a little differently than a normal commander deck where you need evenly dispersed color. Let me read them really quick.
Yep.
Dagatar the Adamant, 3 and a white for a legendary creature, human warrior. He's a 0/0. He has vigilance. Dagatar the Adamant enters the battlefield with 4+1/+1 counters on it. So he's a 4/4. And then you can play one and hybrid black green. And another hybrid black green. So you can either pay 1 and 2 black, 1 and 2 green, or 1 and 1 black and 1 green. That's really hard to say over the radio.
Yeah, that's a lot. I was like, can Josh do it? He did it. Yeah.
And so you pay that 1 and hybrid black green, hybrid black green, and you move a 1/1 counter from target creature onto a second target creature.
Interesting. So this doesn't actually include himself. You don't have to use it on himself.
You can, but you don't have to. Yeah. So you can take his counters, put it on to other people, or take other people's counters and put it onto him.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I could see this being really good and limited when you have a couple of those plus one matters guys and be like, oh, look, now he has flying.
And he's got Death Touch. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can sort of like, boom, just distribute the stuff to give abilities.
Yeah, but in this case, it is pretty underwhelming just because he's a 4-4 for 4 that doesn't really... I mean, you'd have... he's built around me. And,
plus, it costs 3 mana to just move a counter. It's not creating one.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, wouldn't you rather just have High Sentinel Zerushin that just, for 4 mana, just put a plus one counter right on anything?
And
like, create
bigger.
One out of thin air?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think Dagatar is really fun for a limited environment. Maybe even standard or constructed, but I don't think he's really making the cut in terms of EDH, unless you use him as a utility creature inside an Abzan deck.
Yeah, I'm just thinking
I can
like
see that maybe happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see him being powerful enough for our format. So yeah. I mean, maybe. If you think of some cool ways out there, people, like, let us know.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Off the top of my head, I'm not coming up with anything.
Yeah. All right. Our next legendary creature is the Jeskai commander, the Shuyun, the Silent Tempest.
Woo, Asian.
Asian, or a Shuyun, the Silent Tempest.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I can do that because we're both Asian, so
I'm scared. I'm scared of Shuyun now.
Have you read this card?
Forbidden City. Okay.
Yeah. He is 2 and a blue for a 3/2 legendary creature, human monk. He has prowess, so that means whenever you cast a non-creature spell, he gets +1/+1 until end of turn. And his text says, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may pay hybrid red-white, so 2 total. If you do, target creature gains double strike until end of turn. Whoa.
This is a real ability.
This is a commander.
The closest analog we have is Rafik.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Rafik is a very scary, very powerful deck. And this is a similar ability.
Yeah.
I can see a deck based around Shuyun that is of similar power level to Rafik. It would be built differently, though.
Yeah, very differently, because you also have access. They share 2 colors, Rafik, which is white and blue, but now you have red as well. And there's tons of little, like, cheap 1 mana red spells.
And you want more, you want a lot of non-creature spells,
mm-hmm.
whereas Rafik's not necessarily, doesn't have to have a ton of non-creature spells.
Not to mention, you can use this on someone else's turn when someone's attacking. You could be like, all right, I brainstorm and then pay this and make your general have double strike. So you end up killing, like, someone or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Somebody just attacks somebody and they're like, okay, I let it through. And you're like, well,
nope.
You just die then. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's actually, I hadn't thought about that. It's any target creature. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, with Rafik, you have to only swing with one person to get the boost. In Shuyun's case, anyone can swing, and whoever gets through...
So if you just have 4 guys and they only have 3 blockers, they could just be dead. Yeah, that's a really good point. Double Strike is super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is... I think this is a good card. It's only 3 mana, too, so any commanders that are cheap like that, you get them out early.
Yeah.
It's just...
I can imagine playing this with a lot of cantrips, so cards that you...
you're just going to cycle through
your deck. You do something, and then you draw a card from the card itself, so it could be like a Lightning Bolt-esque kind of thing, there's so much stuff you could do here.
I mean, with commander damage, you don't have to pump him all that much. I mean, mm-hmm. just like a not good card you wouldn't normally run, I'm just going to use an example, like Titan Strength.
Yeah.
That gives him +4.
Yep, and then he gets prowess off that as well, so it's +5.
That's +4, I mean, yeah.
Oh, right,
it's +3 from Titan Strength, +1 from the prowess trigger.
So he's
so
a
7. So
there's
7, and you double strike him. That's 14 commander damage. That's 1 card.
Yeah, and that's 1 turn, and that was...
That's you can do that on the turn after you cast him, because that costs you only 3 mana with the Titan Strength. So
mm-hmm.
that's in, like, Shuyun can come down and literally just, like, start destroying people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can very easily just double prowess... Double strike, done.
Yeah. I can see him, once people realize how dangerous he is, I think he can very quickly also get hated out like Rafik. But the fact that
he'll change your metagame because he's 3 mana. So all of a sudden, every commander deck in your playgroup will have to get a lot faster because they can't just not do anything until turn 4 because they'll die.
I mean, not to mention there's also cards that have Phyrexian mana that you don't need to pay mana for to cast that boost them up.
Oh, true. Oh, man.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah,
you can literally kill somebody on turn 4. It wouldn't be tough to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Turn 3 if you have the Soul Ring.
Oh, man.
So.
It's brutal.
Shuyun, I think I'm going to build him.
Damn it.
But, you know, I'll do the group fun
means,
one. Where
well,
he's...
I think I'm going to die to him.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
That's probably what's going to happen.
All right. The next one is the Sultai Khan. It's Tassagur, the Golden Fang.
Nice.
He's 5 and a black for a 4/5 legendary creature, human shaman. He has Delve, which we know means you can exile cards from your graveyard, and this will reduce his casting cost by 1 colorless.
That also includes when he gets sent back to the command zone, so you can actually make him cheaper.
Oh, yeah, anytime you cast it. Oh, yeah. And you can pay for the additional cost with the Delve,
too. With Delving,
too. That's interesting. And his ability is pay 2, and then a hybrid green-blue and a hybrid green-blue, so that's 4 total. Put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard. Then return a non-land card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand.
Interesting.
So he mills yourself for two, and then you get a card back from mm-hmm. your graveyard, but an opponent gets to choose it. Now, yep. this is super interesting because of the dynamics of EDH.
Yeah.
You can choose an opponent. Maybe you've got somebody that's friendly to you at the table, and they're going to choose the best card.
Yeah, or just the one that helps them in that situation the most.
He also has Delve, so you can eliminate the cards when you cast him that you don't want them to pick
yeah.
to give you back. Like, if you got a bunch of land in your graveyard, and you don't want...
Well, fortunately, it's non-land, so it would be like
oh, yeah.
like a random... like.
No, no. Oh, it says non-land.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's true, you can get rid of the stuff that you're like, all right, I only wanted to use this once, or like, I really don't want them giving this back to me specifically.
You can just delve away the sort of yeah. the crappier cards and leave them with no good choices.
It's like, kind of like your own... It's like you're controlling your own fact or fiction, kind of.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is interesting. It goes really well with BDM's deck, I think.
Yeah.
The Sidisi deck we talked about before the new year. This deck... BDM, if you're out there, I assume you are... Well, you already know this, but put this in your deck because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's great. I really love that his abilities work in conjunction. The Delve actually helps with the selection process of the other part of the ability.
It's pretty interesting.
It's also interesting if you run a lot of Delve cards in general, like a Treasure Cruise or whatever, you can get rid of a lot of stuff, you know, and then pull out Tysiger and then maybe stack the top of your deck so that you're releasing the things you want. You know, I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe you put your extra lands on top so that he always... does his ability and pops two cards in there.
You can break this ability, and the Delve, I think, really helps it.
There's a lot of fun stuff.
Really helps. It'll be interesting to see, but I think you can get to the point where you're literally like, you're only leaving cards in your graveyard that you want.
Yeah.
You're choosing which cards are in there, and then they don't have any choice. They're like, well, I'd love to give you something crappy, but you only have these two awesome cards in there.
Not to mention, every time they kill him, you can just cast him for cheaper and
accelerate.
And accelerate what you want him to do.
Yeah.
You know? So, very fun. I think that I would love to see some people that build around that. I would be very excited to see what comes up. All right, next up we got Alicia, who smiles at death. That's kind of an interesting name.
Who smiles at death?
Alicia does, because she's Mardu. She's 2 in a red for a casting cost for a 3/2 legendary creature human warrior with first strike. And whenever Alicia, who smiles at death, attacks, you may pay white-black hybrid mana, white-black hybrid mana, so 2 total. If you do, return target creature card with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped and attacking. Interesting.
This is the type of effect that cheats things into play, and we know that it just can be broken. And in our format, we have things like Sarah Ascendant.
You know? That's right.
You know, we've just got
that
crazy
card.
Yeah, usually like, what are you going to do? It's a power... You know, it's a power 2 or less creature. But there are amazing power 2 or less creatures in the history of Magic.
Yeah.
And
not to mention, too, there are a lot of utility creatures that are power 2 or less. Like your Pinger deck would love to get some stuff back, even if it's attacking someone, as long as they can't block it or whatever. You know? It's like, cool, great, I got my guy back because of
Alicia. Just getting free stuff is
continuously
reoccurring stuff. You know, but stuff like Saracen is the stuff to really look out for.
Yeah.
Stuff that's power in the graveyard is not what his power on the battlefield is.
Yeah.
This card, I feel like this is a build around me strong, very strong deck.
It's also interesting because what you pay is oftentimes going to be similar to or more than the casting cost of the card itself.
Yeah. Yeah, but just being able to continuously reuse stuff.
Yeah.
There's stuff with Enter the Battlefield effects that are going to destroy people. Like, this is the type of effect we know from doing 25 episodes of the show. Like, you can break this effect.
Yeah, not to mention, there have to be so many crazy cards that are like 2/8 or, you know, random, like that just happen to have power 2 or less, but cost like 7 mana or whatever, but are just busted in whatever way.
I like that one. I might build that one. I might try to get tricky with that. And the last one is the Teemer con. It's Yasova Dragonclaw. I don't know the lore from this set, but there's some sort of time travel crap going on here.
Yeah,
is it Surak's great aunt? Lost great grand aunt?
She's not wearing a bear this time around, but she does have like a cougar, a saber-tooth friend.
She is a wuss. She used that scythe thing to kill it. She didn't punch that thing in the face like Surak punched the bear.
It's true. That or it's her friend, because it looks like they could be cuddling.
Oh,
like,
maybe it's her pet.
Or she's just done for.
Oh, no. I think you're right. I think it's her pet.
That's kind of cool.
Anyway, since you guys can't see the picture, it's her next to like a giant saber-toothed tiger that I'm unsure if she's killed or if she's riding.
By the way, we are in the past. Fate Reforged, the other thing about this set is that we have time traveled back in time to when Khans of Tarkir was
ruled. So it is Surak's great-grand-aunt.
Yeah, great-grand-aunt.
I'm pretty sure it's aunt. I don't know why. She's a legendary creature, human wizard. She costs 2 and a green, and she's a 4/2. This was one of the early spoilers. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of combat, on your turn, you may pay 1 and hybrid blue red, so 3 total. If you do, gain control of target creature and opponent controls with power less than Yasova Dragonclaw's power. And you gain control until end of turn, you untap that creature, and it gains haste. So you can basically use a threaten effect on a creature that's got power less than her.
Right. And she starts,
as a 4/2, so you can take 3 or less. And if you bumped her power somehow, which I'm assuming if you ran this as your commander, you would do that.
Would, yeah.
Then you're just stealing huge things and until end of turn, hitting people with them and then sacrificing them probably. Yeah.
Sounds pretty cool. The only problem to me is that I always see cards like this and think like it is best case scenario for you a lot of the times.
Yeah, I mean,
there's always going to be something fun to steal, but A, you're either giving it back, or if you have a sack outlet, you can kill it or whatever.
And it's one creature every turn. Not one creature from everybody, just one creature from a specific person. Plus, there's a lot of decks out there that are like, well, they don't have any creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do about those decks?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's, I don't know. It doesn't seem super versatile. It could probably be fun. Because it is fun to take people's stuff and then smack them with it and then sacrifice it. So, I mean, that's my idea of fun.
That is my idea of fun, too. That's why I built the Marchesa deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other thing that's nice, though, is that you don't actually have to go into combat with her. It's just at the beginning of combat, you can steal a creature.
That's true. You don't have to attack with her.
Yeah, you can actually steal, like, a Fate Stitcher and use that instead or something. You know, you could steal something that has the tap ability because it has haste.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. I don't know. I feel like...
Yeah, I'm not too stoked on that.
I would put her 4th on the list. I'd put Dagatar as the least powerful.
Yeah.
Yasova as the second least powerful.
Tasigur and Alicia are pretty close.
And Shuyun is obviously the most powerful.
Yeah, Shuyun is...
I think Tasigur is more powerful than Alicia, but Alicia...
Yeah,
I could be proven wrong there. Alicia may...
I'm sure there's a couple of cards in the history of Magic that are just like being like, hey, don't count me out.
I'm sure, especially from early Magic, most creatures had power 2 or less, and some of them had extremely powerful utility abilities. So,
Imperial Recruiter.
Off the top of my... Yeah.
Oh, my god!
And just every turn it?
Every turn it.
There's some crazy stuff you could do. Alicia might be more powerful than Tasigur. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would put those close, but I think Yasova is a noticeable step down, and Dagatar is...
Dagatar is just
hanging
out.
Please prove me wrong, because I don't think he's that great.
Yeah, me neither. So we're going to move on and talk about... there's actually a bunch of cool cycles in this set, and by cycle we mean there's one in each sort of color. And of either like an enchantment or a creature or dragons in this case. And we're going to talk about the siege cycle.
Oh, yeah, these are cool.
Yeah, and actually another nice thing to note is that Wizards has started making these cards have modal abilities, which means that they're very clearly showing you the things you can do on the card by sort of separating them out into separate lines.
Bullet points.
Yeah, bullet points. And the sieges, I mean...
There's actually a number of cards that we shouldn't maybe mention this under mechanics.
True.
Because there's a number of cards in the set that say basically... When you play this card, choose one of these things.
Yeah.
They're kind of like charms.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but we've never—I don't know if we've ever seen modal enchantments like this before.
I don't think so, because this is one that hits the table and stays and keeps that sort of mode that you
choose for it. Yeah,
yeah.
Whatever mode you chose, it's basically two enchantments, and you just choose which one of it you use. Go ahead.
So each of these sieges, there's one for each of the clans, and they all actually are related to the names of the Tri-Lands in the last set. So the Abzan one is Citadel Siege, because the land was called Sandstep Citadel. Yeah. And as each of them enter the battlefield, you can choose either Khans or Dragons. And very thematic, very flavorful, and each of them has a separate ability. So Citadel Siege, we'll start off with, is 2/2 white. As Citadel Siege enters the battlefield, choose Khans or Dragons. Khans, at the beginning of combat on your turn, put 2+1/+1 counters on target creature you control.
So that just happens every turn?
Every turn. Kind of like Bolster, but in this case you get to choose what creature gets it. And Dragons, at the beginning of combat on each opponent's turn, tap target creature that player controls.
Oh, you know I love this card.
Yeah, that's
very
shutdown.
I love tapping stuff.
I know, right? And you get to do it at the beginning of combat on each opponent's turn.
Which means it's basically kind of like Blind Obedience, except for you get to choose...
Every single time.
Every turn. You can basically turn off one of their creatures every turn for every player.
In a multiplayer game, it's almost always got to be dragons.
Man,
it's got to be dragons,
it's
right?
So good.
Because you get to do it 4 to 5 times based on how big your table is, as opposed to just once a turn you get 2+1/+1 counters. Wah, wah.
And plus, the negotiation power you have when you've got that is like, dude, please don't tap it.
Yeah,
I'm not going to attack
you. I'm not going to attack you.
Okay, well, what happens if I don't? Like, what are you going to give me?
Yeah.
Like, your power, like, just... I don't know. I'm gonna use dragons on this card like every time. I'm gonna be tapping the hell out of stuff. It's gonna be awesome. Yeah, I'm so excited for this card. But I could see like there's probably decks, especially if you built like an aggro-y face deck. Like if you built an Alicia deck, that deck probably wants, because it wants a lot of low power creatures.
Right.
And that deck probably wants cons because it wants to just every turn just increasing the amount of power you have on the board, and it's gonna try and kill you quicker.
Yeah. That's not a bet. That's pretty good.
I think all these siege cards are good in EDH, by the way.
I agree. I think they're actually, I feel like they're built for EDH more than anything else, because they often say each opponent or your opponent, plural. It's like, oh, you're thinking I have multiple opponents, huh, Wizards? Oh, all right. I'll take it.
And cards with two choices like this are almost always better because at least one of those choices is going to be better in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
And so cards that have versatility, like, oh, when I'm playing against these kind of decks, it's good. But when I'm playing against these other kind of decks, and you're just facing such a wide variety of stuff in EDH, that having this kind of choice just on the card itself is like automatically makes it a cut above, you know, most cards.
Not to mention, like, that's why we love the charms, like, from the last set. But these get to actually stay around because they're enchantments.
So incremental advantage every turn.
Yeah, which is pretty great.
All right, moving on to the blue one. This is the Jeskai one. It's Monastery Siege, after the Mystic Monastery.
Uh-huh.
It's two and a blue for an enchantment. Cons is at the beginning of your draw step, draw an additional card, then discard a card. So that's first choice. Second choice.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Second choice is Dragons. Spells your opponent's cast that target you or a permanent you control cost two more to cast.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
That, I find, is probably very effective early game and becomes much less so later on. But, man, is that an incentive not for people to attack you or choose your target your stuff.
Target you. You know, EDH has a general rule, but not always true, but generally is less about spot targeted removal and more about mass removal and things. So I think Dragons is... I'm not saying there won't be games where you'll want it, because specific decks you will, but against a lot of decks, they're not actually targeting you or your stuff specifically that often. They're usually just like... Wrath of God, you know, everybody does this, you know. But Cons is extremely powerful, like incremental advantage over the course of turns of basically drawing two cards and choosing which one of them.
Not to mention if you were in a Sultai deck and you want to get stuff in your bin, this is a great way to start throwing stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. And also, like, I just said that wrong. It's draw two cards. It's draw an additional card.
And then
discard a card. So it doesn't even have to be one of the ones you drew.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So if you had and oftentimes I would draw a card in the EDH. I'm like, man, I wish this was in my graveyard.
Yeah.
And I wish I had like at least a couple of discard effects in my deck so that I can make sure it gets there. And it's actually funny because usually at first glance, like, discard a card. I don't want to discard a card. And it seems like it's weaker than it actually is. But in terms of what we're doing in Commander, that has a lot of flexibility.
It's huge incremental advantage over the course of time, too. Yeah. Because once you get to enough lands, you just don't draw lands anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's just very, very, very powerful. This card's great. It probably belongs in a lot of decks.
Not to mention it comes down in turn three. And that's super important.
Yeah, so from very early stages of the game, you're just like setting up, you're just smoothing out the rest of your game so much. Yeah.
All right, another card is Palace Siege. It's the black version, and this is the Sultai, right?
Yep.
Because Palace is the opulent Palace. It's three and two black, so this is actually the most expensive out of them so far. And the two options, cons. At the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Just every turn?
Every turn. Every year upkeep. And dragons, at the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses two life and you gain two life. Womp, 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 womp.
I mean,
that could be
effective.
You
say womp, 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 but let's say you're in a player with five, or in a game with five players.
Mm-hmm.
That's like ping everybody for two, gain eight life every turn.
You only gain two life, unfortunately.
Oh, you don't
gain that
much
left. If it was for everyone
that
lost life, that would be way bonkers. I mean, you're still doing eight, though. I mean, that's not insignificant.
That's one of those ones that's just going to be like, you paint a big target on your back for not that much upside.
Yeah.
Or on your front, as it were. You just paint a big target right on your forehead.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get sieged by everyone, like these people in this poor art.
Well, yeah, this one feels like cons, because you just get to pull a creature card from your graveyard every turn.
And by turn five, there probably is going to be stuff in there for you to do that with.
Oh, yeah. And especially since you're not going to... This doesn't belong necessarily in every deck that has black in it, but it belongs in decks where you're sacrificing your own creatures, you're reoccurring them, you know, the Sidisi type decks. It is a very powerful effect.
Yeah. It's a little expensive, I think.
Yeah.
But for that ability, usually, I mean, there's some cards that cost that much just to do it once.
Yeah,
so,
it's true.
So if you can do it multiple times, then I think this card starts out not that great and quickly becomes better and better.
This is a card, it feels like, where for specific decks it's going to be very powerful, but for some it won't be useful at all.
Yeah, agreed.
The next one is Outpost Siege. It is the red one, the Mardu one. It's 3 and a red. Option number one, cons, is at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card.
Oh, it's basically Chandra's zero.
Yep. It's basically draw an extra card.
Yeah.
And then the second option, dragons, is whenever a creature you control leaves the battlefield, Outpost Siege deals 1 damage to target creature or player.
Oh, that it can be so... I mean, we've seen Goblin Bombardment.
Yeah, and actually, if you have Goblin Bombardment
it
and this,
two.
It's doing two. I mean, with tokens...
Yeah, this is
and a sack outlet, it's...
That's a house.
That sounds like a very small effect. It is a very large effect. Mm-hmm. Like,
especially because it's like, oh, you have a 2 toughness creature that's messing up my board.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yep, boom, boom.
Like, yeah.
Done. Yeah, it's so often red wants to destroy its own creatures to have some effect too. Mm-hmm. It's just very
You're gonna get fodder for it easily.
And if you're not that kind of deck, then just draw an extra card every turn. I mean, it's not draw an extra card every turn because if you don't have the mana to cast it, then it just goes away at the end of turn. But it's close to draw a card every turn, and red doesn't really duplicate that type of effect very well.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, like, if you think about it, in the 99 card deck, if you're thinking about, like, oh, I exiled a card, but I couldn't play it, now it's gone forever, it's like, well, you can't think about it that way, because that card may never have been drawn anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So the fact that you had the option sooner than everyone else, and you have 2 cards, is way more important than thinking about, like, oh, what if I accidentally lose this card that I can't play?
And then later in the game, you're just literally, it's just card advantage. Like, mm-hmm. You're just drawing one more card than everybody. Yeah.
If it's a land, you get to play that land, you know? So I like this siege a lot, actually.
Yeah, this is very good. And it does, like, especially for, like, mono red.
Oh, gosh.
In mono red, you're going to use cons almost every time because you have plenty of stuff that does the other part, which pings stuff for one. But
you're going to have tons of mana to play those cards as well.
Yeah, it's this is a really good card.
Yeah.
It's not very expensive. 3 and a red is not bad.
I wouldn't be surprised if this saw standard play with a tokens build as sort of like a finisher that was just like, hey, look, you want to block my guys, wipe my board? You're going to pay for it.
You could easily be at a point in the game where you drop that and they're going to die no matter what they do.
Yeah. No matter
because
how
Because I just
block,
have 5 guys, so
you have 5
either
life.
You don't block them and you die, or you block them and you die.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very interesting. All right. Our final one is the Frontier Siege, which would be...
Teemer. Frontier Bivouac.
Frontier Bivouac Siege.
Why do I know how to say bivouac?
Bivouac
Thank
is
you, Cons of Tarkir, for teaching me the word bivouac.
Yeah, and Anok is not Inok, and so many other small things. Abzan, I keep saying Abzan.
It's Inok. Sorry, Wizards, you screwed it up. A-I? My last name, Lee Kwai.
That's
A-I.
True.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not pronouncing
Josh
Lee Kwai.
Josh Lee Kwainok. Frontier Siege is 3 and a green for 4 total. Cons is at the beginning of each of your main phases, add green to your mana pool. What?
That's each of your main phases.
By the way,
going back to what we talked about earlier, even if you have no creatures, you go first main phase, add 2 green.
Mm-hmm.
Go to combat. Even if you have no creatures, second main phase, add 2 green.
Yeah.
So you get 4 mana per turn with this thing.
Yeah. You get to use 2 per main phase, but if you have a card like Omnath out
or you just cast something.
Yeah.
And then you cast something in. Yeah, you're right, because the 2 mana from the first main phase won't transfer over to the second main phase.
But
if
my
you don't spend
gosh,
that.
Could you? I mean, this in like a Nykthos based deck that really wants to cast like Hornet Queen.
Yep.
This gets it out way earlier.
Yep. It's just crazy amount of ramp.
Yeah.
Plus, on the turn you play it, if you play it in your first main, it refunds 2 of your mana, so it really only costs 2.
Right, because you get
if
the
you
second
can
main.
Play if you can use that mana. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's,
yeah. Good call.
That's super powerful. Sorry, that's just the first option.
Oh, that's right. I got too excited. I'm still pretty excited about the first option. The dragon's option is whenever a creature with flying enters the battlefield under your control, you may have it fight target creature you don't control.
And fight is when they both creatures deal damage to each other. So,
but this is whenever a creature with flying enters the outfield.
It's really
and
weird.
It's a green
it's
enchantment.
Green.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but it's Teemer.
Yeah.
And we're in a dragon set.
And there's a giant dragon blowing things apart.
This art is untrue. That dragon is not fighting that other creature. It's
just
burning the hell out of it.
It's obliterating.
That's not a fight.
And in the background are 2 other dragons doing the same thing.
They're not fighting.
People on the ground are like, maybe we can stop it. It's like, no, I don't think so. Have you seen Game of Thrones? I don't think it's going to stop those dragons either. Cons is definitely a blowout for me. That's awesome. That's so much mana.
It's a lot of mana. It's so much mana over the course of just a couple of turns.
Yeah, even if it gets taken out in the third turn, you've generated, like, what, 8 mana to use?
And then, like you said, Omnath, Krufix, there's a whole bunch of decks that are just like, oh, I'll take that mana and I'll just save it for later. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that it's crazy powerful. It reminds me of Braid of Fire, which was in our Overperformers episode with Wedge, that basically had a cumulative upkeep and gave you like one red.
Right. And back and then Mana Burn would kill red. You.
Yeah. This is that type of card, and those cards are... And this is... That was during your upkeep.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit narrow because you have to use it for like instants and things like that. This is during both main phases.
Yeah.
Ugh. I like this card a lot. Yeah, it's going to see a lot of play in green decks. It's very, very powerful.
I think this is probably the biggest EDH playable out of all the cards so far because it does everything you want. And I mean, you can build around
the red one's really good.
The red one's really good too.
And the white one is my personal favorite because I just like tapping everybody's stuff. Yeah.
Not to mention, if you guys are playing cards that flicker cards and permanents, you can pop these in and out if you want to choose dragons the next time.
Yeah,
so
true.
That
true.
Is a possibility.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, oh, I want to draw a card next turn. I'll just
flicker it up. All right, so that is the Siege Cycle. Overall, I'm already so excited about this set just from the cards we've read so far. Even the
Siege Cycle is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the black one is a little bit narrow. All the rest of them I feel like can be played in almost any deck that has those colors.
Yeah, agree.
White's a little narrow, too, I got to say. But I glossed over white because I like it so much. But I actually think in a white deck, you could just play Citadel Siege just to slow everybody else down. Just to tap their best creature every turn. So
yeah, and not to mention, it's really going to make a big difference. It's going to be like, hey, your Voltron General is not going to be murdering one person a turn now.
Yep.
It doesn't stop someone like Xu Yun, who's just like, I don't care what happens, I'm still paying my mana cost.
I'll just give this other thing double check.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, the last cycle that we're going to talk about briefly, we have a whole new cycle of Legendary Dragons. So if you guys are in Elder Dragon Highlander because you want some Elder Dragons, get excited. We have overcosted dragons that aren't that powerful, but are really cool.
I wish they were three color.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the flavor, right, the Vorthos
They'd
part
be
of
useless
this,
and limited if they were three color.
Yeah, and like in the past, all the clans were not formed fully yet. So these are sort of like the other side of that. Yeah. So the first up is Atarka World Render for 5, red and green. It's a 6/4 flying trample legendary dragon. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, it gains double strike until end of turn. I think this is actually the most playable out of all of them.
Yeah, it's very powerful. With Kalia or something, it's just like it comes in tapped and attacking.
Yeah.
And
we just build a dragon tribal deck.
Yeah.
You know?
You totally can do that. I mean, you could before, but now you really can because there's a bunch of common dragons and uncommon dragons too.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Yep, it's a 6/4 flying trampler with double strike. That's pretty good.
It's kind of the teamer dragon.
Cost 7.
Yeah, that's the only problem with all these guys is they are very expensive.
The next one is Dromoka the Eternal. It's 3 and was that Celestia, green white.
Yep.
And it's a 5/5 flyer, of course, legendary dragon. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, bolster 2. So if we'll recall, that means put 2+1/+1 counters on your creature with the least toughness.
So that'd be fun if you had like 6 dragons attacking and then you're coming in for a huge amount of damage.
It's just 2 extra damage. Like the last guy doubled somebody's.
It's true.
Doubled all your dragons.
You could have 5 dragons attack at once and you bolstered 10. So.
Oh, that's true. It's whenever a dragon attacks. Wow.
But the setup cost, again, it's like it's going to be hard to get there. Also, in these colors, how many dragons are you going to have in green and white to you know,
that's
be
true.
Attacking?
This is not going to be... I can see five color dragons coming.
That would be sweet.
Yeah,
and
but
then
this,
play,
you're
what's
right
his name?
If this is your general.
Who's the big guy? Progenitus would be your general, right?
Sure.
To truly get the flavor in.
All right, next one.
Next up, Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury. It's the Mardu dragon. It's 3, a red and a black, a 4/5 legendary
that's Rakdos,
dragon.
That's Rakdos, dude.
Oh, it's Rakdos, that's right. What is the... It's
yeah,
the,
it is,
it's
quote
the,
unquote,
the
Mardu.
The forerunner, right, yeah. And it's whenever a dragon you control attacks, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. And he's actually the first card that has dash on it. So his dash cost is the exact same as his casting cost, and you can cast the spell for its dash cost. If you do, it gains haste, and it's returned from the battlefield to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So you could technically do that from the command zone and then bounce it to your hand.
It's pretty interesting because you can. He's a big anthem effect. He gives all your attacking dragons +1/+0. And then if you don't want him to be vulnerable.
All creatures +1/+0. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, it gets.
Oh, so yeah, like 2 dragons and a whole bunch of other creatures.
They'll get
everything
+2.
With +2.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. So if you wanted to save that anthem effect and just use it every turn.
Yeah.
And not like have him be out there sitting vulnerable to get killed.
Yeah.
You could do it.
And in the case he dies, you can actually cast him from the command zone for the same cost, for the dash cost.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah, so it's kind of like
you can just always dash him out.
Derivy
like
a little bit.
Yeah, Derivy, yeah. It's interesting to have dash on your commander. I think that's more powerful than having dash on a card in your deck.
Yeah, it gets sucked up to your hand, but at least you get to play it for the same cost.
So
you know?
So if you had Kolaghan as your general, are you building a sort of token deck with some dragons in it?
Yeah, I could see that, having maybe a lot of low-cost dragons as well, so that you can really make
use of his... Like dragon whelps and stuff?
Yeah, whelps and things that can really make use of his ability when he
comes
in. That's
interesting. That might be a thing.
Yeah.
I could see that being a deck.
Maybe you could do a Vorthos storm-based deck, and everything has to be lightning bolts and weather-based.
Those were lightning bolts. Those were not fireworks. Just,
yeah, you don't want to see those coming at you in the holiday.
I need to work on my sound effects.
And finally, we
okay.
have...
Let me ask you about pronunciation here.
There's two more. One more after this, actually.
Because I think this is Ojutai.
Yeah, I think it's Ojutai.
But it should be Ojutai if they're saying that AI makes the A sound. Listen, it's Ojutai.
Yeah, it's Ojutai.
Soul of Winter. Legendary creature, dragon, of course. It's a 5/6 flying vigilance. Costs 5. And wait, I can do it. It's starts with an A.
I don't even Azorius?
Azorius.
Yes, Azorius.
5 white and blue.
/ teamer, or Jeskai precursor.
So 5 white and blue, 7 total, 5/6 flying vigilant dragon. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, I'm sensing a theme here, tap target non-land permanent in opponent controls. That permanent doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. Well, we know Josh loves it.
Yep.
Tap your stuff. It doesn't untap.
But I don't love it. It's because it costs 7. It's like, why don't you just play other cards that do the same thing?
Derivi does it.
Yeah, exactly.
Similar, not the exact same.
Right. For much less mana, though.
Just put this in the Derivi deck.
It's exactly. Yeah. But the things with all these, like, you got to have a lot of dragons to really make these super effective, right?
Yeah, this is 5-color tribal dragon. Yeah. It's a thing, man. It's happening.
Finally, we got Silumgar, the Drifting Death. It's a 4 blue-black. What is that?
Simic. No. Dimir.
Dimir, that's right. Or the control colors. He's a 3/7 flying hexproof.
3/7?
Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, flying hexproof.
Hexproof is definitely the most important thing so far. And whenever a dragon you control attacks, creatures defending players control, the player controls, gets -1/-1 until end of turn.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's actually pretty solid if you're building a dragon deck.
If you attack
guy.
With 3 dragons and just like, oh, all your dudes are... I mean, that...
All your dudes, A, can't block, pretty much, and or slash, they're all dead.
Yeah, that could be really powerful, especially against token decks.
Mm-hmm. But since you can only do it to one player at a time, everyone's going to be like, did you just see what happened to his board? Everyone's like, oh, Silumgar.
He is hexproof and flying. So you've got evasion and hexproof on a guy. He's just sort of ripe for Voltron anyway.
Yeah.
He's okay.
Legendary creature dragons. A lot of fun. Limited bombs, for sure.
These are not elder dragons. They're just...
No, they're not elder dragons.
They're not elders. They're like... middle-aged dragons.
But they are potential commanders. So if you guys didn't like the legendary cons to build something around, you've got these guys instead. All right, so that does
the
it
cons
for...
cons are better.
Yeah, that does it for our cycles. Now we're just going to quickly go through the colors and talk about...
some of the cards we like.
Our standouts, yeah. And there are some beastly cards in this set that I think are going to change modern as it stands. Definitely going to shift standard like crazy. But
here's a guy that's not going to change either of those things, but he's going to change EDH, or I don't know if he'll change all
EDH.
Yeah,
if he'll change EDH.
He's going to come down in some games, and people are going to be like, oh,
he's
going to
be an overpriced foil, that's for sure.
Oh, man. Okay, it's Ugin, the Spirit Dragon.
He hath returned.
He's a Planeswalker, costs 8, colorless.
Blech.
He comes down with 7 loyalty.
Oh.
His +2 is Ugin deals 3 damage to target creature or player, so... He comes
+2 firebolt? I mean, lightning bolt?
+2, just lightning bolt. He goes to 9 loyalty.
Dang.
His negative X, which is his middle ability, is exile each permanent with converted mana costs X or less. That's 1 or more colors. So he will not hit artifacts or colorless things, but he will wipe the board of anything. Basically, you could drop him down for 8 mana. He'll have 7 loyalty. You can negative X for 7 if you want and kill him and get rid of everything that costs 7 or less that's not an artifact or colorless.
Yeah.
Or you could do it immediately for 6, and that's going to get rid of almost
that's
everything.
That's going to get rid of most everything, yeah.
Yeah. So he's kind of a board wipe.
You can build your deck so that you do like a -3 and everyone else gets screwed except for you, too, you know?
True. So. And it's repeatable. Like, you could do it the next turn and the next turn, especially if you wipe the board, so there's a good chance he just lives.
Yeah.
And then his -10, his ultimate, is you gain 7 life, draw 7 cards, then put up to 7 permanent cards from your hand onto the battlefield.
Yep.
That's insanity.
Sounds like a he's also that will ball out.
Yeah, that sounds like, hey, I'm just going to put a bunch of Eldrazi out for free.
Yeah.
Or Blightsteel Colossuses and crap. So, and it's -10, so you just have to +2
two
him
turns,
twice.
Yeah.
And he can even take one damage in there.
Not to mention he is at least potentially killing something that could kill him with the plus two. On the big table, people are going to be like, nope.
Yeah,
he's coming down from the minus X on the big table.
If worst case scenario is he's a board wipe, it's still pretty good. It's an exile board wipe.
It's a sorcery
speed exile board wipe. And it's not, it's also potentially a one-sided board wipe because if you build your deck with a lot of colorless stuff or artifacts in it, he won't wipe that stuff away.
Yeah, I agree.
So in a Memnarch type deck or...
I think if I do build an artifact deck, he's like the...
You have to put him in there because he's just not killing the artifacts.
Yeah.
So it's just a one-sided board wipe. That's very powerful.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, he won't get rid of other people's like soul rings and stuff.
Right. So. Yeah, he doesn't do that, but he gets rid of basically all their creatures, enchantments, stuff like that.
Interesting.
I think it's very powerful in the right deck. It's not a put in every... It could be. You could just put it in. I mean, for 8 mana...
I mean, you could, but would you?
Well, an 8 mana board wipe, like Fade Retribution is a 7 mana board wipe.
Yeah.
And it's
I think
an instance.
Garrick's Wake is 9.
Yeah. You could. If it's just in there because it's a board wipe, it's not that great, but...
Yeah.
Basically, he's never going to be bad.
Yeah. It's interesting to note that his ability is actually the opposite of Nicol Bolas's on the Planeswalker. Because he makes lose 7 life, discard 7 cards, and some other stuff, right?
Yeah, and something else that I forget.
Yeah.
And I could look up, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, so Ugin's great. Don't overpay for him, though, guys.
We had some people asking about pre-sales on him. And honestly, our buddy Jason Alt from Brainstorm Brewery suggested that price is not likely. The pre-sale price
is not sustainable.
Is likely to go down because he costs 8 mana. He's probably not going to be played in any other format, which generally means that the price you're paying for pre-sale is too high.
Yeah.
It's a prediction, but Jason knows his stuff, so I would listen to him.
Yep, and make sure to check out his articles as well, because they always talk about why in the...
Because he knows about finances and stuff.
Yeah, the reasoning behind it. Okay, let's talk about some cards in the color of white. And the first up, this card has been... people are calling it the Chase Mythic of the set.
This is...
This
is going to make some waves.
Yeah, this guy, or I think there's one other person that can contest him, but it's the Soulfire Grandmaster. And it's one in the white for a 2/2. So just from a vanilla standpoint, that's acceptable. It's a creature human monk that has a lifelink. Instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink.
That's crazy. I don't think we've ever seen that.
Nope.
I can't think of it off the top of my head. So if you lightning bolt somebody and he's out, you just gain 3 life.
Yeah.
Or if you fireball somebody, you just gain...
However much life you
probably fireball. About 127 life. That's my assumption.
And so far, Grandmaster's triggered or activated ability is for 2 and then hybrid blue-red mana, so 4 total. So that makes so far Grandmaster a Jeskai card. The next
important,
time,
you do not have to tap him to do this.
Correct. The next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, put that card into your hand instead of your graveyard as it resolves.
So it basically turns everything into a...
Lifelinking rebound spell.
Yeah. So you pay 4 mana, 2 colorless, and then either 2 red, 2 blue, or a red and a blue. So 4 total. And then you play an instant or sorcery, and the instant or sorcery just goes back to your hand after it resolves.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
It's insane.
It costs 4 to do, so you're going to have to do it late game if you're casting some big stuff. But if you're casting small stuff like... I don't know, Brainstorm?
Brainstorm, you just Brainstorm for 5 mana every turn,
yeah. And that's, I mean, that's as good as having a Jace out, essentially. Like, I don't mind paying that mana if I'm allowed to do
if you have a lot of mana.
Really
but what
effect,
about,
you know?
I don't know, take extra turn crap? I mean, that's what everyone's thinking, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
This is the infinite combo where once you get up to about 10 mana or so, you can just take all the turns.
I think on Twitter you bumped, why oh why is she not legendary?
I did, and people were like, because of extra turns. I'm like, I know. I know.
It's like, duh, of course.
They could have put something on there that said, if you take an extra turn, you lose the game or something. And then, then she's fine.
You could get her back every turn with the red, the Mardu guy. Oh, no, you can't because of the colors. I was thinking, it's like, oh, that'd be sweet if you could bring her back every single time when she dies. Because this card's going to get killed as soon as it hits the battlefield. It
you have
powerful.
To. Yeah. You have to. It's extremely powerful. And just the shenanigans that it allows you to do, basically casting certain spells like every turn is pretty crazy. What I want to do is I want to Howl of the Horde. I want a raid triggered Howl of the Horde back to my hand, cast it again in the same turn.
And have it replicate like 6 times.
Well, then that Howl of the Horde would be copied by the past Howl of the Horde. So now
you've
got 9
right.
Howl of the Hordes that all raid triggered. And then I'll just lightning bolt and kill everybody.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And you gain a ton of money.
Yeah,
ton
lightning
of
bolt
too.
Wouldn't do it. But yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I'll also be at 5.
No, you'll just do a blasphemous act. a billion times.
But you kill yourself.
Hey, go out in a big ball of fire.
You're in white. I mean, you can maybe, like, you can deflecting palm that or something. I don't know. Does deflecting palm work? Probably not in that circumstance.
Yeah,
anyway. Yes.
That card is
bonkers. It belongs in a whole ton of decks, especially decks like Jaleva. Oh, mm-hmm. No. Jaleva doesn't have white. Decks that have a high density of instants and sorceries.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just think of being able to just, like, Insurrection every turn.
Oh, gosh. Or, I mean, or wish every card had flashback or, you know, had a way to get it back from the graveyard. It's like, now you do because it goes in your hands. It's now your cards have tons of, like,
it's amazing with flashback because until you get Soulfire Grandmaster out, you just cast it.
Yeah.
And then once you start flashing it back, then you...
Yeah, you can. I think you can bounce it back to your hand before the exile. I don't know. Or it could be as it resolves, you exile it. We'll have to check the rules.
Oh no! It says the next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn,
it doesn't want you to break it.
Yeah. There's still a million ways to break it. It's very strong.
Another white card that I wanted to talk about is Jeskai Barricade, which is just one in the white for a 0/4 flash defender, and it's just a utility card that I think can find its way into a lot of decks because when it enters the battlefield, you may return another creature you control to its owner's hand. So
it's kind of like free.
Yeah, it's free. You can use it as a defender. You can also use it to save your own creature or redo an enter the battlefield effect. There's just a lot of utility, I think, that this
card
can
give you. Here's the thing that's weird about this card. It costs 2 mana for an 0/4,
mm-hmm.
but on turn 2, you don't have anything in your graveyard yet to get back to your hand.
Right, I mean...
But then on turn 7...
On the battlefield.
Yeah, sorry to get...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But even then, like, on turn 2, you don't have anything for it.
So you just play it out. Don't worry about it.
If you need to have a defender, I think you can play it out, but otherwise, you just hold it. It's just
good
in,
like, Animar.
Yeah.
You know what this is for? This is for Manifest. So Manifest, manifest a bunch of stuff, and there's a sorcery under one of those that I can't flip up that I want, and I just Jeskai Barricade, bounce the sorcery back to my hand, and now I can cast it.
Or if it's
as
like an
sorcery.
Instant, you could do the Barricade and flash, and then do the instant immediately. Like, gosh, that would be such a blowout in so many cases.
Yeah, so this is, that's what that's kind of for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay. I think for 2 mana, you can find stuff that does more than this for EDH, but there are uses.
Yep.
The next one is...
Oh, yes. This is the other Chase mythic of the set.
And they're both in white. This is just young Pyromancer's
uncle.
Older stepbrother.
Yeah. Monastery Mentor. 2 in the white for a 2/2 human monk with prowess. So whenever you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +1/+1. And here's the other one. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a 1/1 white monk creature token with prowess onto the battlefield.
He's a 2/2 also.
Yeah. So every time you cast a spell that's not a creature, you get another monk that also has prowess.
He's actually a little different than Young Pyromancer because it's a non-creature spell. And
correct.
Young Pyromancer was instants and sorceries. So if you cast an artifact, he'll make a 1/1 with prowess. The prowess on the tokens is kind of insane.
It's insane. They all have the ability to get pumped up like crazy now because they can go to 2/2s, 3/3s, 4/4s.
Jeskai Ascendancy.
Yeah, the Ascendancy.
Harder to do in EDH, but still.
Yeah. I think, actually, in EDH, I'm not sure how great this is because it is a little build around me because you need to be casting a lot of non-creature spells to get tokens out. There are better token generators that don't require as much from you, but in terms of like an aggro strategy or something that needs to be efficient to kill someone, like this guy is, I feel like he's just got the power.
He's interesting. Yeah, in an aggro strategy, you're generally going to be wanting more creatures in your deck, so then that's not even going to turn him on. I don't know. We'll see. There might be a way to fit him into a specific kind of deck. Off the top of my head, it's difficult. He is very powerful, though, in what he does.
The problem is he does die to a lightning bolt in Modern, because he can only get up to 3 if you cast 1 spell. If you have 2 spells to save him, then...
But so does Young Pyromancer.
Yeah.
But Young Pyromancer costs 1 in a red, and so he's a lot cheaper. That's a big difference between 2 mana and 3 mana.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm no expert about Modern. We're going to have to ask our buddies over at the Masters of Modern podcast. Alex and Ben, is that card good in Modern? I'm assuming you're listening. You and BDM. I'm waiting for your answer.
I'm waiting too. They haven't. Why are they being so silent?
I don't know. Weird. Kind of rude.
So rude.
All right.
Let's
move on to
blue.
Next card, moving on to blue, is this one's getting a little bit of press. Just because Delve has so changed the landscape of every format.
Every format.
This is Temporal Trespass. The casting cost is insane. It's 8. And 3 blue, so 11 mana total. It's a sorcery, as mentioned. It has Delve, which means you can exile cards from your graveyard to reduce its colorless cost by 1. Mm-hmm.
So this could be 3 blue.
Yeah, it could be just 3 blue, and it says, take an extra turn after this one. Exile Temporal Trespass. So you can't do crazy shenanigans where you
keep doing it
over and over, but it could be just 3 blue, take an extra turn.
Which is pretty good. Time Walk is 2 blue to do it.
It's pretty good.
Or I mean one in the blue.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, it's definitely restrictive in the way that you have to have blue, blue, blue to do it, if you are fully delving it. But still, I could see this being playable even as one and three blue, or yeah, two and three blue. Yeah,
it's fine. I mean, decks
you're already. That... I mean, like for Treasure Cruise, you're already getting rid of 6-7 cards, right? So yeah. Like this, you will in the decks that could use this, you're gonna be able to delve away that much anyway.
Decks that want EDH decks that want extra turns generally either want this card or they like either want another card that gives you an extra turn or you don't. You know, and this card's fine. I don't think it's necessarily the most powerful.
Yeah,
you know, Treasure Cruise is basically Ancestral Recall, which is why it's so powerful. It's basically one blue draw three cards in a lot of formats.
Yeah,
this is not on that level of power comparatively to the other cards that do similar things, right. I think. So it's good. You know, it's going to be played.
Yeah, I think it's just not pushed enough to make it okay. Yeah. Not like super broken, you know. If it was like 7 and 3 blue or even 8 and 2 blue, it'd be a completely different story.
I feel like, I mean, I'm not an extra turns player.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of players you see and they love the idea of taking an extra turn. And I'm just not that type of player. So whenever I look at a card that's like, give you an extra turn, that never lights off the light bulb in my head. So, but for some people it does. And I'm not saying that they're wrong or I'm wrong. I'm just saying like that for like when I see cards like this, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
like, yeah,
but
good.
In general, I'm like that about all extra turns cards. Cause I'm just not that interested in taking extra turns. You know, for whatever reason, it just doesn't appeal to me. So, but this card's probably very powerful. I mean, an extra turn is powerful. So,
all right, next up we have Torrent Elemental. And this one is makes me very confused as to when you're actually going to use it. Maybe you can help enlighten me. But it's 4 and a blue for a 3/5 with flying. And whenever it attacks, tap all creatures defending player's control to player controls, which is like, whoa.
That's super powerful.
That's
all
super
by
powerful,
itself.
Yeah. And then its activated ability is interesting. It's 3 and green, black, hybrid mana, so 5 total.
So Sultai.
Put Torrent Elemental from exile onto the battlefield tapped. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery.
So it's specifically combating being exiled, or it wants to be exiled?
Right, delve.
Yeah, that's true.
Delve.
Oh, that's what it is.
That is
you
what it
delve
is.
Delve it out of your graveyard, and then you cast it again for free. That's exactly what it is.
For the same CMC as well. It's 5 total.
Dude, you nailed it. Because I was like, I don't get this. Yeah, so that's what it wants to do. It wants to be delved away, and then you cast it again for later.
Right.
Then it's a card in your hand after that.
And it sucks because if someone's like, well, I'm not going to exile it now that you can play it again, I'm just going to put it in the bin. And you're like, great, I'll delve it away.
At some point, it's a 3/5 flyer. They're going to want to kill it.
Yeah, and it's going to come down.
It's tapping all their crap. Like, that's going to be really annoying, especially if you've got, like, static orbs and stuff where they don't get to untap their stuff.
This is a bomb in Limited. This thing would wreck house, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. In Limited, this thing is... Again, if you have a couple of delve cards, and you just anything that's free value. But I think it's playable in EDH. It has a very powerful effect. Tap all creatures defending player controls is super powerful. You have to stack that with effects that don't let them untap, but that's not too hard to do.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it has a home. It does powerful things.
Yeah.
The next one...
I want to talk about this dude.
Meringue River Prowler. He's 2 and a blue. For a 2/1 human rogue.
Looks like it could be my cousin or something.
Meringue River Prowler can't block and cannot be blocked.
Okay, 2/1 unblockable.
And you may cast the Prowler from your graveyard as long as you control a black or a green permanent. So you can just cast him anytime if he's in your graveyard. So this is a super powerful type effect in EDH, in Voltron-y decks, in decks like
Rafik Shuyun. Loves this, even though he can only use the green permanent ability part of it. You know?
Yeah.
But you can still cast him.
But he doesn't have green or black, or he doesn't have black mana symbols in his tech, so you can play him in the Rafik deck. Yeah, exactly. He's just can't be blocked, and you can continuously cast him, you know, as long as they don't exile him. So it's a very powerful card, and a card I think belongs in a lot of Rafik type Voltron decks, because so many times in those decks what happens is you're like, I just need to draw a creature.
Yeah.
You know, and then, well, you can always, as long as that guy's in your graveyard.
In your graveyard, you can always at least get him out. Yeah. One card I wanted to talk about, it's also part of a small cycle, are these enchantments that when they enter the battlefield, they become auras with enchant creature, and you manifest the top card of your library and you attach the enchantment to it. And they all give different stuff for each of them. And I think Cloudform is the best one by far, because it's for 3 mana. It's 1 blue-blue. You manifest the top card of your library, you put it in there, and then you attach Cloudform to it, and it gives it flying and hexproof. So for 3 mana, you get a 2/2 flyer hexproof that could potentially become something.
A 2/2 flyer for 3 mana is already fine.
Right.
With hexproof is like, so you're getting a bargain. And now if you stack the top of your library, so that's a Blightsteel Colossus or something crazy, that you can flip up.
And if they can't get rid of the enchantment, you've just given it
It's got hexproof.
It's got hexproof. Yeah, it's pretty
solid.
So
you can put like, yeah, something crazy under there, mm-hmm. and they don't know, and then you attack, and they can't kill it, and if they don't have flying, they can't block it, and they could just be dead.
Yeah, which is pretty rough. So I think I like Cloud Form the most out of all of the manifest attached disenchantment cards.
Yeah,
I could see that being played in some EDH stuff. Again,
yeah,
it depends.
It's the
on
only
can...
one that has a chance. The rest are not powerful enough for our format. Yeah.
Yeah. And enchantments in general, you're usually asking to be 2-for-1, which means someone kills the thing that you enchanted, so you lose 2 cards and
right,
only use
exactly.
one. In this case, the hexproof gets around a lot of that, which is why it's nice.
And a lot of Voltron decks just already want to make their stuff evasive and hexproof, so it could go in a Voltron-y type.
And the last blue card I wanted to talk about was Reality Shift, just because you get to exile a target creature in blue. Doesn't really happen that often.
Yeah, it's 1 in a blue for an instant. Exile target creature. Its controller manifests the top card of his or her library. So they get a 2-2 out of the deal, but...
Yeah. Or it could be yourself, too.
It's like Swords to Plowshares in that there's some upside for your opponent, but really you're probably getting rid of something that like is going to kill you if you don't. So
yeah, and you'd rather roll the dice on whatever's going to pop out the other side.
It's probably a land anyway. I mean, you have a 50-50 chance of that happening. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a good card. And like you said, blue doesn't get that type of spot removal. So yeah, it's outside the color pie in some respects. All right, moving on to black. Brutal Horde Chief.
Oof.
Yeah, this guy is 3 in a black for an 3-3 Orc Warrior. Whenever a creature you control attacks, defending player loses 1 life and you gain 1 life.
Not bad.
Then he has an activated ability for 3 and then hybrid Boros. So it's 5 mana total. 3 and hybrid Boros, that's red, white. Creatures your opponents control block this turn if able. And you choose how those creatures block. So
oh god, it's
the
an
shenanigans
aggro strategy. Yeah.
Is like, hey, I've got 20 tokens.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to make all your guys, they all have to block. They all block one of them.
What?
Or Jimmy's attacking Craig.
Oh my gosh. That's right. You can do it on anyone.
Yeah. Jimmy's attacking Craig. I'm not even involved in combat, but you know what?
I'm a tap 5.
I'm a tap 5 and I'm going to make the worst blocks imaginable.
Oh my gosh. this alters the
whole
table
because people
are
like, well, I'm going to attack him. Are you going to mess with me when I do that? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. What are you going to do for me?
And you can instant speed remove them. You can still tap it down and be like, all right, cool. I'm going to do it for you, Josh. And great. And even though he's dead, by the time it gets to combat, you know, great. I can choose all this stuff for you. Yeah. Brutal Horde Chief is, again, it's like, why aren't you legendary?
Seriously, this could be legendary and it wouldn't be totally broken. Right. It's a really cool effect, but it also has, which we glossed over, but it has the Hellrider effect.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have haste, but Hellrider was like whenever one of your creatures attacked, it pinged them for 1. This also gains you life when you do it, which Hellrider
didn't do. Yeah,
that's definitely
very effective.
And again, in a token deck, that's a brutal because you can often have like 40 creatures, you know, and it's like it doesn't matter. Yeah. Not only can you screw with their blocks, but it doesn't matter. It's just as soon as you turn them sideways, they do 1 damage. To the defending player, and you gain 1 life, so now you're not even worried about crackbacks as much.
Yeah, and this is also actually, I guess this is kind of in the cycle too, kind of like the Solfar Grandmaster. It's like the mythic.
Yeah, there's a mythic but non-legendary
but
creature
non-legendary,
cycle.
Yeah, so that's Brutal Horde Chief. Next up, we've got the Archfiend of Depravity. 3 in 2 black for
Depravity.
It's a 5/4 flying demon, and it says, at the beginning of each opponent's end step, that player chooses up to 2 creatures he or she controls, then sacrifices the rest.
It's like a weird inverted abyss.
Yeah, it's the beginning of each opponent's end step. So their cleanup phase, essentially, they have to kill all their creatures but 2.
Unless... You know who's really mad when you cast this?
Who?
The guy that has to go right after you.
Right, because there's like...
He has the least amount of time to do anything about it. Yeah,
that's true. He's like, God, I hope I draw something. You know who's not mad about this? Sigarda.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very powerful card. It's just... Yeah. And token decks, good night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until they get rid of this thing, good night.
Yeah, and 5/5/4 flying is very decent in terms of stats. It would work great in Kalia, too, because you'd be like, all right, I'll just have me and Kalia.
Yep.
Actually, it's each opponent, so you can do whatever you want. You can have him and a billion other dudes out.
Yeah, you can have a token deck if you want.
This guy is depraved. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, this is a super powerful effect. Yeah. The fact that it's each opponent, it's... Well, we know anytime you read the words each opponent, your ears perk up, right?
Yep.
Ooh, might be able to use this.
I like this.
Oh, here's the new damnation, quote unquote. It's Crux of Fate, 3 in 2 black for a sorcery. It says, choose one. Either A, destroy all dragon creatures, or B, destroy all non-dragon creatures. I wish there was a C, all of the above, but there's not.
C, board wipe.
Disclaimer, the A's and B's were added by Josh when he read that.
Nice. Yeah, they were bullet points originally, but I like the A and B.
So you either destroy all dragons or destroy all non-dragons, which it's going to be non-dragons 90% of the time.
And oftentimes this is going to be a board wipe.
Yeah, just kill everything.
Maybe like one or two things stay standing afterwards.
Well, if you've got this in your deck and you've got a dragon or two, that's cool.
Yeah, but you're not gonna, I don't think you're gonna build around it by any means. I mean, it's a board wipe in black that is not as cheap as Damnation, but essentially does very much the
same
thing.
But in the real world, in money terms, it's cheaper than Damnation.
Oh yeah.
It's a board wipe in black that doesn't cost $50.
Yep. Yeah. And that's why we like it. This was also spoiled super early as one of the first spoilers for... Yeah.
It's going to go in a lot of EDH decks. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Ghastly Conscription is the next up. It's a sorcery, 5 and 2 black, 7 total. Exile all creature cards from target player's graveyard in the face-down pile. Shuffle that pile, then manifest those cards.
Wow. So all those cards become 2/2 face-down creatures, but you can flip any of them up
any
for
them.
Their
And you know they're creatures as well.
So it's like you get to draw all those cards, but then... In the meantime, they are all just 2/2 creatures.
Yeah. It's 7 mana. That's good.
This is like game-endingly good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it depends if someone has creatures to do it for, but if someone's playing like Caridor, talking to you, Craig, Ghastly Conscription is your worst enemy. Like, this thing is just like, oh, let me take all your nice little things you've been hiding in there.
And if you build your own deck, like the Sidisi deck, where you're just dumping a bunch of your own creatures in there, and then you just do that.
Yeah.
It's just like... I mean,
the crazy thing is
it's like board wipe right now where you're just dead.
Yeah, you don't even care if, I mean, here's the thing, you won't be able to cast a lot of the stuff if you do it to someone else's graveyard.
Right.
But you don't even care if they die again, do you? Because they were there in the first place. Yeah. So, great.
And you just return Ghastly Conscription to your hand somehow with regrowth or whatever and then cast it again. And then it's like, what? Are you just, like, how many board wipes you got?
Yeah, this thing just keeps going.
Oh, and the last black card we want to talk about is... Orc Sure Shot. It's 3 and a black for a 4/2 Orc Archer. It says, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, target creature and opponent controls get -1/-1 until end of turn. So,
yeah, you can just spot removal guys with tokens.
Yeah, exactly. Like, think of Gisa.
Yeah.
She's just putting out a bunch of zombies. You know, you make 5 zombies and kill something.
Yeah.
So, it's not a super, super powerful card, but I think there are decks that are just putting out a lot of creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, Prosh.
Oh, yeah.
Prosh just gets to just mow down something important whenever you cast him, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's again, like, there's a home in certain decks. It's not crazy powerful, but it does fit into what some decks are already doing.
Yep. And actually, there's another card called Soul Flare that is also one of those very specific cards. I think this is in a Kalia deck above all. It's a 4 and 2 black for a Delve 4/4 Demon. And if a creature with... flying was exiled with his delve ability, he gains flying. And it's the same for first strike, double strike, death touch, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, reach, trample, and vigilance.
So any creature you exile away when you delve him out,
He sort of steals their ability.
It's, for one thing, cool card design.
Yeah, definitely cool card design. In like a Kalia deck, if someone's like, I had to get rid of, you know, your Avacyn or this or whatever, and they get in your graveyard, it's like, great, I'm going to delve away that and this, and now I have a indestructible, death touch, lifelink, trample flyer. You know, it's like you can make some massive, crazy cool things.
I made my own Chromanticore.
Yeah, exactly. I could see Chromanticore being in some decks and Soul Flare just being like, yum, let me have you up. Yeah, let me eat you up. So we'll see. I think that's dreaming just a little big, like usual.
This is what EDH is for, my friend.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, moving on to red. We have Shaman of the Great Hunt.
He's Teemer-esque.
He's the Teemer mythic guy that's not legendary. He's a Orc Shaman, costs 3 and a red. He's a 4/2, has haste. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, put a 1/1 counter on it. So he's kind of like gives everybody dethrone, but
it doesn't care
if they've got the most life or not.
Mm-hmm. But it has to do combat damage instead of triggering when they attack.
Right. And he has Ferocious, which is interesting because he is a 4/2, so you're going
to... Oh, he triggers himself.
It's just, it's weird that it even is called Ferocious. I guess if you somehow... Somebody could make him so he's less than power 4, you wouldn't be able to do this anymore with just him. Anyway.
Until he hits someone and puts the counter on him. Yeah.
Weird. Anyway, Ferocious for 2 and Hybrid Simic, which is green-blue, so 4 total. Draw a card for each creature you control with power 4 or greater.
Okay.
So draw cards if you have a bunch of big dudes, which is just powerful.
Yeah, in general. And it's going to happen if they're doing combat damage with him out, because he's going to be giving them plus one counters.
Again, he can't go in Prosh because of
the
colors.
He's an Animar-esque character. But even then, I'm not totally sold.
You would have
to
make a token deck that was red, green, and blue, because then all your dudes are just getting huge.
Yeah, red, green are the colors for tokens, really. So
yeah,
you could definitely
you really want white, but blue has actually come into its own as far as a token color lately. Yeah, so definitely. He's interesting. I don't think he's as good as the white guys.
No, definitely not. Dragon Rage is next. 2 and a red for an instant, and add red to your mana pool for each attacking creature you control. Until end of turn, attacking creatures you control gain red. This creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So you give every attacking creature you get gets fire breathing. And then you get that much mana for each attacking creature. So technically, if you're just going to use the mana to boost them, this says each creature gets +1/+1. Each attacking creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn.
But really, it's better than that, because it you can shift it to whoever wasn't blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you attack with 10 dudes, you get 10 red mana. They all have fire breathing. They block 5 of them. Then you go, well, this guy that's not blocked gets +10.
Yeah.
But you can also, use it for instance, you don't have to use that mana for the fire breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just generate 10 mana during your combat phase. And if you can figure out a busted way to do that, which there's a lot of them, then you can just literally like, this is like, hey, I generate a ton of mana.
Yeah.
Which as a rule is a way to break the game. And we just know from EDH formats, just cards that just generate a ton of mana are easily breakable.
Yeah, and just slap them with a giant burst of damage one way or the other.
Yeah. The next one, Mob Rule.
Oh my gosh. She's getting attacked by like the monkeys from Lion King.
What?
It's
The Wicked Witch sent out a flying monkey. Is that Dorothy?
I mean, that could be that too. Or I was thinking the shaman monkey in Lion King that finds Simba.
Oh yeah, I was thinking Wizard of Oz.
Yep,
thinking,
those two, those flying monkeys.
Rafiki. Not Rafiki, but
yeah,
Rafiki.
Not Rafiki. That should be an altar.
No, I think this is pretty clearly Wizard of Oz. I don't know where Toto is. He probably already got chewed up. Poor Dorothy. She's in big trouble here.
She is.
She's looking for those ruby slippers. It's 4 and 2 red for a sorcery. It says, choose one. Gain control of all creatures with power 4 or greater until end of turn. Untap those creatures. They gain haste until end of turn. Or gain can do the same thing for creatures of power 3 or less. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like a cheaper, more fair version of Insurrection.
Yep.
You get everything that costs that's power 4 or more till end of turn, or you get everything power 3 or less until end of turn. Probably, well, I don't know. This could go either way.
Yeah, if you're it costs 2 less than Insurrection, right? Because Insurrection is 8.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I could see this being a game ender in many situations, regardless.
I mean, if your deck really wants to Insurrection, for whatever weird deck you've built that, like...
And doesn't mind doing it twice, you know?
Then it probably wants to do it twice.
Yeah.
But in general, Insurrection just sort of put into most, like, just generally as like, this will finish the game if I ever get to 8 mana and I draw it.
Right.
Mob Rule won't necessarily do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times you're going to take half of the creatures or 2/3 of the creatures, and then they'll still have some blockers, and then, you know.
Right.
So... I think there's the gap is only 2 mana, and Insurrection is so much better. So your deck will have to be pretty specific to want this over Insurrection.
Yeah, I agree. I like it. And plus, sometimes you do want to only gain control of like 3 or less or 4 or more or whatever. Because you could also be like, hey, I take all your creatures with 4 or more and they swing at you. Guess what you have to block with?
Yeah, and then I sack them all to my, you know, Ashnod's Altar or something.
So,
could still be good. It's probably good in like Marchesa deck, because you're literally playing a card that just takes one creature. So why wouldn't you play a card that will take 3
take
or 4?
Take all of them, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, but I think like in a normal deck, Insurrection is just better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the nice thing is they are both all creatures, so that you are searching for, you're going to grab every single thing on the board.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this next one might be my favorite, or... Among my favorite.
Yeah, this one is... This one's
way to take a stand, Josh. Among my favorite.
Amongst my favorites. This may be in the top 50. It's somewhere in there.
It's one of my favorite Fate Reforged cards.
Arcbond. And more dragons. Alicia is actually making a comment on this. It says, if you must die today, make your death worthy of a legend.
Wow. She's smiling at death while she says it, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
All right, Arcbond, 2 and a red for an instant. It says, choose target creature. Whenever that creature is dealt damage this turn, it deals that much damage to each other creature and player. Okay, so words we just love in general are each other player.
Yeah, and each other creature.
That's great too, but
No, this is actually each player. So this includes yourself.
Yeah.
So you will get hurt for
Each other creature and each player.
Right.
So it does do damage to you. So be careful.
So basic, let's say I'm swinging in with a 2-2 and you're going to block with a 4-4.
Yeah, then you just...
Arc bond
my 2-2. It takes 4 damage. It does 4 damage to every creature and every player.
Yeah, that's like a board wipe for 3 mana. I mean, there's so
many
ways.
That's a very simple use of it and still extremely powerful.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And that's just like the most basic you can get.
But if you do crazy stuff, like, I don't know, some way that you can deal 40 damage to, you know, a creature or a creature's about to take 40 damage and you just kill everyone, like, very possible. Like, Arcbond's one of those cards that just can come out of nowhere and win games that no other card could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could combine this with a guy that forces you to block in a certain way, right? And then, like, oh, great, now I can just have everyone die.
So one of our listeners on Twitter was talking about this card. We were chatting, and he mentioned a card called Palisade Giant. The listener's name is Robin Korhonen. So thank you, Robin, for pointing this out. Palisade Giant says... It's a creature. It says, all damage that would be dealt to you or another permanent you control is dealt to Palisade Giant instead.
Oh my gosh.
So if you funnel all the damage coming at stuff to the Palisade Giant and then you arc bond the Palisade Giant. So let's say you did something like Blasphemous Act, which deals 13 damage to each creature and each player. And all that damage gets channeled into the Palisade Giant and you arc bond it. You can literally destroy everybody.
Everyone.
Now you need a way to save yourself.
Uh-huh.
But, you know.
Some kind of fog or something. I don't know. There are ways.
Circles of protection. Or, I don't know. Don't run circles of protection.
If you ran a circle of protection.
Just so you can save yourself from an arc bond.
Oh my gosh. People were like, you just made the jankiest deck combo ever and we all died and you won because of it. And I have no words.
I'm going to totally do that.
Yeah. This, so is gonna be awesome. This card, I mean, I can see people posting combos for this for the next like year.
Yeah. It's just potential power level is so high.
Yeah.
I mean, it has potential power of like deal 100 damage to everybody.
Yep.
Like, you know, there's just not very many cards that can do stuff like that.
Yeah, I'd love to see this in Standard. I'd love to see what happens. Like, what if you built this with like a Hornet Nest and it was like, here we go, buzzing in.
It might deal only 1 damage to each creature and player, but it'd be death touch damage because the creature itself is dealing the damage. There's some crazy interactions. I just think, anyway. You can do some fun stuff. Take a look at this card for sure.
Yeah. If you guys have any fun combos, just leave them in the comments below.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll talk about them next week. The last red card I wanted to talk about was Humble Defector. Just another interesting red card that...
It feels like a conspiracy card.
It does feel like a conspiracy card. It's 1 and a red for a 2/1. And as you guys might know, every time that red wants to draw cards, it always comes at a downside. So either you have to discard a card and then draw one instead of drawing and discarding... or you have to discard
this
two cards.
This one's downside is a little crazy.
Yeah, it's Humble Defector. Is you can tap it to draw 2 cards. Target opponent gains control of Humble Defector. Activate this ability only during your turn. So this, however, combined with like the Jeskai Barricade, means that you can trigger his ability, and in response to that, bounce him to your hand so you don't have to give him away.
Yep.
And drawing 2 cards in red is pretty... I mean, it's great because there isn't that much card draw in general. If you just wanted to tap him and give it to someone else... Then
Chaos
sure.
deck.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to have a circle of people and be like, all right, I'm tapping Humble Defector, I'm passing it to my right, and go.
Well, it's so. Target opponent gains control, right? So
right.
if you were friendly with somebody, if you made a deal with somebody, it's like, I'll give it to you, and then you give it back,
give
to,
it
me.
Back to me.
And
yeah.
it's like, we're each getting 2 cards, but the other 3 guys aren't.
Yeah, and it's like, great, now we have to kill this Humble Defector card that is like giving our opponents an amazing advantage.
It's only 2 mana, so you can literally be doing this on turn 3, which is a pretty big thing to just be able to... So you're basically... If you made a deal with somebody at the table, you could draw 1 extra card every turn, basically, because you're drawing 2 cards every other turn.
Yeah, yeah. So Humble Defector is interesting. I just thought it was a really fun card. All right, finally, we're on to green.
Oh, yeah. Return to the Earth. So this is 3 and a green for an instant. It says, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying.
Utility.
People are already running... This is not necessarily better than Crimson Grip because it costs more and it doesn't have split second, but they're running that type of effect.
Mm-hmm.
And this just added or creature with flying onto it.
Yeah.
So in a lot of cases, I feel like it's just a replacement for the type effect you've already got in your deck. But in addition to Artifact and Enchantment, you also can get rid of a creature if you need to. So it's a flying creature, obviously. But I just think that this is worth noting and maybe slotting in as a strictly better card than something you're already running.
Yep, I like it. Teamer Sabretooth up next, 2 and 2 green for 4 total for a 4/3 cat. This guy I really like. One in a green.
He looks amazing.
Yeah, right?
He's got like runes burned into him.
This is Yasova's tiger cat.
Oh, so it is?
I think it is.
She didn't kill it. Her pet.
It looks like she's like bleeding over here. She's like not having a good time. She looks like she's been injured.
She doesn't look like she got injured by the cat, though. Why she got her back turned to it?
I don't know. Well, you know, a mystery for another day.
Yasova, you are so much of an enigma right now.
We need to figure you out. anyway, Teamer Sabretooth's ability, one in the green, you may return another creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, Teamer Sabretooth gains indestructible until end of turn.
Animar.
So you get him to be indestructible no matter what. You don't have to return a creature. Oh, no, if you do. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like,
but it doesn't matter. Like doesn't matter, in something like Animar, where you just want to bounce your creatures and replay them all the time just to put counters on Animar.
Yeah.
And then you just get upside for it, too.
And the Humble Defector, right?
You can just bounce. Or if you've got stuff like, I don't know, Elvish Visionaries.
Yeah, Visionaries. There's also guys like Draining Whelk in Animar that you want to be able to flash them in and counter something with it. So.
Oh, yeah. Mystic Snake.
Mystic Snake,
oh,
yeah.
Crap.
Yeah.
Don't. Mystic Snake every turn. That's just brutal. Actually, more than every turn.
Great Whale. As well, dude, or giant whale, or whatever it is, you can bounce that back and just go nuts. So there's lots.
And he's a 4-mana 4/3, so he's already just pretty good.
Mm-hmm. He triggers a ferocious for those that care about
cards.
That.
Good, yep, cards good. Good. There's a lot of decks I think it can go in.
Yeah,
it's amazing how often just bouncing one of your own creatures is something you want to do.
Yeah,
even if it's just saving it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
It's like,
yeah, I think that's something that people overlook. Is like, I path to exile your guy. Like, no, I'm gonna bounce him.
Yeah, I'll just bounce him, and then they're like. Crap.
Yeah.
So if I want to kill that thing, I have to kill the stupid saber tooth first, and then I have to exile it because you can bounce something and make him indestructible.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, the next one is, this is getting a lot of press.
Yep.
Whisperwood Elemental. It is three. Whisper. If I whisper it, they won't be able to hear me.
I was just saying whisper because that's how the wood sounds.
Yeah.
We're back, guys. 1,000 wins, Whisperwood Elemental.
That's wrong. You're right. That was bad flavor on my part. Really, because that wouldn't be Whisper Wood Elemental. That'd be Windy Wood Elemental.
Windy Wood Elemental.
Yeah, it should really be like.
Oh God, it's the creepy.
Okay, you read the card.
All right, fine. 3/2 green for a 4/4 creature elemental. At the beginning of your end step, manifest the top card of your library. Or sacrifice Whisperwood Elemental. Until end of turn, face up non-token creatures you control gain. When this creature dies, manifest the top card of your library. Goodness.
Man, it's hard to whisper for that long.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I hope I wasn't too distracting.
No,
from people listening. I hope I was distracting to you. I was hoping that...
I definitely was just
basically
looking at
every turn you manifest the top card of your library, right?
Yeah, and then you can sacrifice them, and every single creature, if it dies... you get to manifest the top card of your library as well. So they get extra value. So like Board Wipe comes in.
Oh,
like
wow.
Boom. Like you can sacrifice Whisperwood Elemental. Everything that's face up dies, and then you manifest that.
But if they
cards.
Board Wiped, you'd do that before they Board Wiped, and they would still wipe it though, right?
Right, but you still get all these new manifested cards.
Is that how it work?
Yeah.
Sacrifice them until
end
of turn.
Yeah,
oh, I gotcha.
So it's like,
non-token.
Oh, Board Wipe, hit it, and then everything can pop back in. Or not pop back in, you just get more stuff.
It's like
stuff.
Everything gets a new ability tagged onto it when this dies manifest. I gotcha, yeah, okay.
So that's an amazing recovery.
Wow. It's non-token.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work in your token decks, but still. And it's just basically you can look at it as creating a 2/2 every turn.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. And plus, it's also card advantage because it's like you get to see one more card of your deck.
Yeah,
unless you're worried about losing instants and sorceries. If you're heavy creature-based.
You're not playing this in a... Yeah, you have to be heavy creature-based because it says non-token creatures get this ability when you sacrifice it. So
you
just want a ton of creatures out. Yeah, card's extremely powerful.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right, final green card, Shamanic Revelation. 3/2 green for a sorcery. Draw a card for each creature you control. And Ferocious, you gain 4 life for each creature you control with power 4 or greater.
So draw a bunch of cards, potentially gain a bunch of life. Just a powerful card, and especially in something like mono green.
Yeah.
You know, where you
or
just...
Or Animar as well.
Yeah.
Animar keeps popping up.
Yeah. Yep, that one speaks for itself.
Yep. All right, now we have 2 more cards.
We're on the home stretch here.
Home stretch, yeah.
Man, all that whispering, my throat feels kind of funny.
Yeah, good drink. First up. Oh, I like this card a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, Hero's Blade. You want to read it?
Sure. It's an artifact. It costs 2. It's an equipment. Equipped creature gets +3/+2. Whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach Hero's Blade to it. Its equip cost is 4.
Yeah.
So The equip cost is way high, but you get to equip it for free if you're equipping it to a legendary you just played.
AKA your general.
Yeah, which, you know, if you're playing Rafiki or something, it'd be great to just have him come out and he just automatically gets plus three, plus two.
Oh my gosh, he would swing for like 18.
Yeah, just immediately. Because you're also putting Swift Boots on him, I'm assuming. Yeah, you and they're just like destroying somebody. Yeah, so.
Anytime you can cheat an equip cost, it's really important. Like Kikijiki does it with Thornbite Staff.
Yeah.
Because it's a shaman, so it comes into play and it equips him automatically. So this is great. I think if you have a Voltron deck of any kind, or even just running a lot of legendaries, you know, like you have a.
If your game plan is to hit people in the face with your general specifically, then this card probably belongs in your deck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to put this in my Captain Sisay Weatherlight deck.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Also, flavor wise, very flavor. Like a pirate sword.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. It's a hero's blade.
Yeah.
All right. And the last card we're going to talk about is Crucible of the Spirit Dragon. Why is this rare?
Yeah. It's just like there's clearly they want a dragon deck to exist. And I'm assuming they want it to exist in EDH because it's not going to exist in any other format.
Yeah.
So here we go. Crucible of the Spirit Dragon is a land. You can tap it for one colorless mana, or you can tap one colorless and tap the land to put a storage counter on Crucible of the Spirit Dragon. Or you can tap Crucible of the Spirit Dragon and remove X storage counters and add X mana in any combination of colors to your mana pool. But you can only spend this mana to cast dragon spells or activate abilities of dragons.
This thing is just so slow.
Wow. If you're building in a five-color dragon deck or a three-color dragon deck, or, you know.
It gives you something extra to do on your turns if you have one extra land in the thing. You can just keep adding tokens to it, but or storage counters, I guess.
This card's pretty garbage. There's a lot of storage lands that don't even require you to put in mana into
and
it.
And not
to
mention
it.
This is only for dragons, spells, or like dragon abilities. So,
womp womp.
It could be better if it did it like automatically every turn or something, but at this point it's just, this is not what you want to open up in like a sealed pack.
I don't want to open up in any pack.
Yeah, in general.
Period.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the exciting part. Oh,
yeah.
So that's Fate Reforged. That's not every card, obviously. We just did the highlights, what we think is playable in EDH. If there's some cards you think we missed that you think are going to make a splash in EDH. Then,
or even if it's just for one general, that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, put it in the comment section on Rocket Jump or tweet at us. We'd love to hear from you. And
now we're getting to the exciting part.
Oh, yeah. If you've been on the edge of your seat waiting to see if you've won a dual deck or a whole bunch of booster packs.
Or just skipping through until you find out when we talk about this. Don't do that, please.
Nobody would do that, right?
Yeah, right? We're all good people.
All right,
here.
Get ready. Because if you hear your name called or your iTunes
username,
then you're going to need to contact us with your address so we can send you the stuff. You want to do the honors?
All right. Well, for the first
I want to listen.
All those packs.
That's
and
the
then,
sound of the booster packs.
This is the sound of cardboard.
That's the sound of the dual deck box.
The dual deck, yeah. Not as exciting. So let's go ahead and give away the dual deck first. It's Speed versus Cunning. We got Zergo, Helm Smasher versus Arcanist the Omnipotent. Both great commander cards. And who's going to win this one?
Okay, the winner is Hal Lewis.
Woohoo! Winner!
Thank you for the cool iTunes review. And Hal, again, email us at commandcast@rocketjump.com.
Yep.
And we will send that out to you.
Yep, just give us your address. And the next winner is going to win 3 booster packs from Journey into Nyx, 3 booster packs from Born of the Gods, and 3 booster packs from the 2015 core set. Lots of good stuff here. A pseudo fat pack. And the winner is...
It is Zoso Spartan.
Zoso Spartan. Congrats, buddy. You thanks for the positive review.
I'm pretty sure that's probably his real name.
Zoso?
Zoso Spartan.
Spartan's pretty cool.
Dude, if it is, it's the coolest name ever.
No one would ever make fun of you in school if your last name was Spartan.
No, because you'd kick them into like an endless well.
/ the swing set.
Don't kick anybody, Zoso. We've got, so again, Zoso, commandcast@rocketjump.com.
Yep, just send us your mailing address and we'll get the prizes out to you as soon as possible. And another reminder, if you leave a positive review between now and the next episode, which we'll record, I think, next Thursday or Saturday, you will be entered to win again. We're going to be giving away the pre-constructed Commander 2014 decks. If you've already left a review and you haven't won yet, you are automatically entered into this contest as well. So it means you get a second chance at winning.
Just for free. That's awesome.
For free, exactly. All you have to do is go on iTunes, find the podcast, The Command Zone, leave a positive review, and you are automatically entered.
All right, good luck, everybody.
Good luck. All right, now we're at the end step of the show. I like calling it the end step. Josh came up with the
time
idea.
Time for our end step.
Yeah, end step.
Do we have
cleanup.
Any triggers that we have to...
My Chase is returning a bunch of stuff to the battlefield. So I love that.
You know, I wanted to talk about something cool.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we should just... I don't know. I don't know if we're going to do sign-offs like Limited Resources does, but there are times where we want to talk about just something cool, not Magic-related. And this
usually it's VGHS, but...
usually it's VGHS, although if you haven't watched VGHS yet, I don't know if me continuing to say it will make you do it, but you should.
Yeah, and you know what? You're not allowed to win a prize if you haven't seen it. Just kidding.
I don't know how we would do the kind of background check necessary
to...
Anyway... There is a cool podcast I've been listening to lately. A lot of people are talking about it. I just finally got around to it. It's called Cereal.
About the food?
No. Oh. Cereal with an S. It's actually a bad name. Because it's about a crime that occurred in Baltimore in like 1999. Mm-hmm. And this reporter decides that she's going to try and see if this guy that got convicted for it is innocent or not. And she's going around. It's very.
She's reopening the case herself.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like interviewing all these people. It happened at a high school. It's like, But every week, she knows she's got new information. And then by the end of the show, there's 12 episodes. They're all done. They're all out. She's actually getting information because people have been listening to the show. And they're like, I went to high school there during that time. I've been listening to the show, and I've got information about the case.
Oh, wow.
So pretty cool stuff happening. It's riveting. I mean, I got totally obsessed and listened to the whole thing, all 12 episodes, in like 2 days.
Wow.
So anyway, check that out. It's called Serial, Serial.
It's an NPR-sponsored podcast as well, right?
Yeah, it's by a lot of people that do This American Life, which is another awesome show.
On National Public Radio.
Yeah, so check that out. That's a cool thing, and maybe I'll try to think of cool things next week that I'm enjoying, and maybe we'll just try.
One thing I'm enjoying is Reddit. Actually, Reddit's a really great place for a lot of discussion for cards and stuff, for Magic-based stuff. So if you guys are looking for another place to sort of see the spoilers as they're released and like get, you know, like someone's insight on it as to where it's going to fit in the format, reddit.com/r/magictcg is where I've been going a lot recently.
There's an EDH Reddit also.
Subreddit of just /EDH as well.
And did we really just say Reddit is like a thing and it's cool, like people don't know that?
Yeah, do you guys know what Reddit is? Have you ever heard of this thing called Reddit, Josh?
Just now. I've never.
Well, the subreddits are really, really great. That's actually where I get a lot of my, I get informed from Reddit, and it helps me sort of expand my vocabulary and helps me talk better about stuff under the show, too. So I have to attribute some of my.
Get more smarter?
Get more brain powers. So I have to attribute some of my my big, huge, honking smart guy brain to that show. To that subreddit.
To Reddit?
To Reddit.
Oh, that's just scary. You're attributing some of your intelligence to Reddit?
Yeah, I guess so. It's better than 4chan.
All right, this is just going nowhere. Everybody, thank you for listening. Make sure you tell your friends about the show if you're enjoying it, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Make sure you leave those reviews and win some prizes.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.